Welcome to another episode of Sisters in Conversation. I'm your host, Debello Motswane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On today's episode, I'm joined by Thulelo Makola, who is currently an advocate. Welcome to the show, Thulelo.
Hey, Debello. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. So, Thulelo, we're going to start right at the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your upbringing? Where did you grow up? How many siblings do you have? Do you like your siblings? Were you raised by your parents, your grandparents? Just tell us a little bit about baby Thulelo. Then we can move on to why you decided to study law.
Okay, great. I love my siblings.
Great.
Let's start there. If they're watching, I love you guys. But I grew up in Soshanguve. My father has what? My father's 5 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Married my mother. Okay, well, he came with 1 child.
Mm-hmm.
Married my mother. Then they had 3.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the last born.
Aww.
And then grew up in Soshanguve.
Mm-hmm.
Around the time I was 3, parents divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was raised mostly by my mother and my siblings. And then I've got a little brother from my father. We're a good group of a, not really blended, but we're great siblings.
That is a blend.
Nah. Yeah. So we're 3 girls, 2 boys. I'm the youngest girl, but the oldest girl, meaning I'm the strict, the more kindly rang type of girl, you know. Then I've got a big brother. Shem, yeah, but in any event, yeah, that's me, that's my life.
What was your childhood like? Like, what's one of the memories that stand out to you? Were you, you know, stealing peaches from the neighbor's tree that was overhanging into your yard? Like, what kind of child were you? Were you coming in after dark during high school?
No, funny enough, I was a mixed, I was okay. I'm fun.
Mm.
And shy, ne? I went to a private school, Mara. You know, when you're in the private school, Mara, you're the not so private girl.
Yeah.
So I went to a private school.
You can take
school,
the hood out of the. You can take the girl out of the hood.
Yeah, was that? You know, and I went to an all girls school, a convent school. Majority of my primary till grade 10, then. Shame my dad couldn't pay my fees anymore.
Mm.
Had to move to another not so bad school.
Mm.
Barge SA College in, well, I went to Iona Convent. Then I moved to SA College in Pretoria CBD. Mm. At least there I got some government subsidy to be able to pay for my fees. But besides that, growing up as a child who looked at her mother, all of us. Mm. So somebody who worked really hard. I had a tuck shop business, which looks like Uber Eats of the time. Nah? But what would happen is that our tuck shop line was long.
Mm.
And I thought, okay,
let me take... tuck shop? Yako hai?
Yako skolong.
Oh, okay.
Go skolong. I was an entrepreneur.
Okay.
I was an entrepreneur. So I'd have this tuck shop business where I take everybody's lunches. The rich kids' lunch orders. Hot dog, spaberry, blueberry, bawan.
Hey.
So I'd make like 30 rand a day.
Okay.
Then.
Oh, you were doing the rand. Like,
I was,
literally,
yeah,
oh, the Uber Eats.
I did Uber Eats. It's my idea. So, karegisa, negeregisa, moho, karegisa, mangunya. Karegisa, there was a time when these big burgers they were selling in Gezina. And they looked like they valued at 10 rand, but they were 6 rand.
Mm.
Sell them.
For 10 rand.
For 10 rand.
Okay.
So I was a child who's always been entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
Always look for ways to make money. I love money.
I love that. And money loves you.
Look. Double store.
No, I love
you know
it.
That
I love
yeah.
it.
So I've always wanted to make money, tried to reduce the pressure from my mom also.
Sure.
Because I'm the last. And, in all honesty, the way I saw my mother trying with us, I felt I needed to assist. So it was me having to have no longer to pay for my transport, for my bus ticket, for my lunch. And
please.
Eyeliner and lip gloss. And you
I think
good.
You and I are the same person. We have a very similar background. I was also, you know, my parents divorced at a young age. She was my single mom. Very entrepreneurial as well. Like nekidula ki rekisadi yoge tacos kolo di pop, you know.
Yeah.
Also during the holidays, nekina le car wash business, nekichata tenranta ki. My younger brother, who was actually more than anything, he was just carrying the bucket. But, you know, same sentiments about wanting to just alleviate the everyday household expenses for my mom. So if she doesn't have to just pay for that one pair of shoes that I've really liked, then for me, that made a big difference. I love that.
Yeah. So basically, that was me. I took on... Oh, we took on the responsibility at a very young age. And I think it translates to your adulthood as well, where you constantly become that older, younger sibling in the family. Shaman, unfortunately, you know, growing up, go Soshanguv and any other township, drugs have kicked into our society, which, you know, my brother got so into the Nyaupe and whatever. So, you know, when you look at that and you look at this poor woman, my mother, well, my parents both passed away, unfortunately. But looking at her, I just, you know, I've always felt the need to just do better. Just remove some of that stress. At all. But I was a clean freak.
You've always been a law-abiding citizen.
No, not really.
You know what?
But yeah, I was a normal person.
We've already said you fit in proper. Let's leave it at that.
Fit in proper. But yeah, that's basically the Tulelo growing up. I was a very lively person.
That's good. That's good.
The life of the party.
I think let's move to what inspired you to study law. Like, no one else or Kulu and Partners on TV, or did you come across, you know, an advocate, I am a Kopila Magistrate Court?
Yeah.
What inspired you to really just pursue this route?
Yeah, I never wanted to.
Oh.
Yeah, you know those stories. Never. I mean, there were people in high school said they're going to study law. I'm like, ha, wait, man. Good for you, you know? Never my path whatsoever. I've always been a maths and science girl.
Okay.
Wanted to study the engineering or town planning, something along those lines. Never wanted to study law. Didn't even think I could stand before any judge, court, or whatever. Never wanted to be the so-called voice of the voiceless.
You had none of that.
None.
So, unyaka mo.
So, when? Hey, how did you get life? Here? Life is weird.
Yeah.
Because you remember I said I've always loved money. So, Sundays, my mom subscribed to Sunday Times Open Career. Engineering. I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. But my dad was an advocate.
Okay.
Right? But he was a struggling advocate. So it's never been something that I saw as quite something that I could do fine.
It wasn't appealing. It wasn't,
romantic.
It was just...
Like this guy.
How?
I'm about school fees, the invoice, I So I'm just like, no, it's not something that I would do. So what happened, then I applied for town planning at UJ. Bang accept, but... Then my dad, because you know how it is with parents that have divorced, your mother must pay this, your father will pay this. So my dad's like, fine, I'll pay your tuition, your mother must pay for your
accommodation and what.
So I'm like, oh, well, this woman, I don't see her being able to pay for that, right? So I'm like, no, it's fine, I'll stay home, I'll figure it out, but I'll do just this. I did my trick in 2006. So in 2007, I don't go to UJ. I stay home. I'm like, so because my math, science, English marks were good, I'd get some lady, I don't remember her. I'm going to interview at banks and Mara. because I was a child, I was doing really bad in those interviews.
Yeah.
Really, why do you want to work here? Because I'm young. Could do better. I was really bad in those interviews. So I stayed home trying to figure out what I'm going to do. Then my dad at some point, you know, he felt bad. He's like, no, why was I uni? Then you'll be like a property lawyer. I'm like, not so far off from the civil engineering, town planning. Maybe it seems like a thing that I could make work. Then the year after, I registered for law. Luckily, I liked it.
Okay.
Well, but luckily, it was something that I really liked. So it wasn't necessarily an inspiration on how I ended up being in law, but it was a matter of having been there through some kind of change of direction, probably if the universe decided that that's where I was supposed to be. It was a marriage that worked most of the time, so I studied at UNISA. And I felt that is better because it alleviates that burden over my mom.
Traveling, accommodation.
So, you know, you just study at home, you teach yourself. Around second year, I got pregnant. Then I had a baby. And it was more hard. You know, it was more, even more depressing if you fail, knowing there's a small little human being.
Depending on you, know, you now.
That's depending on you. And because now I wanted to make it work so badly. But after that, I got back up, finally completed, at least within 5 years. So that's been my... how I ended up having a law degree.
Oh, I love it. And then once you were done with your studies, how did you find the transition from, you know, not even necessarily campus life, but how did you find the transition from just being a student and then, I'm not sure if you went the articles route. I noticed that you were a law researcher. Did you ever consider articles at all? Or how did you get into your first job post your... qualification?
So what happened with UNISA, usually in your final year, there's a position for a student assistant. The head of department, there was a girl I knew who worked for those positions, and I wanted them. Dibatala 7,000. Like, I'm going to make a killing here. So I was like, no, I want to work there. I asked this friend of mine, Vero, and I'm like, if there's positions, please let me know. Then, so what happens is that you come there, got your final year. Once you're done, you register your master's, then you become a postgrad assistant. Then you'd then be promoted to become a lecturer. But it's training for you to be an academic. So it's a thing where they call it grow your own timber, meaning ultimately we're growing our own paper, our own timber. These people will ultimately become the academics. So they train you to research, to write, to teach at in your most final years, and then you have to register your postgrad and
so this grow your own timber is offered by UNISA.
Yeah.
Is it still,
I don't know if it's still a project or whatever.
That's
it is.
Interesting.
Yeah, but they are usually those positions in final year of studies for all the departments in the College of Law. So then I got a job at Department of Jurisprudence. That's really my first job as a legal somebody, which was a research position. Whenever the professors and lecturers need to do their research, you go to the library, get them the articles, do all of that, pack assignments, and it was like you work from 8 until 1 so that you can focus on your studies. So that was my first job, my final year. Then I graduated. Then they promoted me to a postgraduate research assistant. There you start lecturing a little bit. You start, you know, setting up the exams, assignments. You join a team. So I also did that while I was registered for my master's. And then the year after, I was promoted to become a lecturer. In private international law. So I lectured for that year. Then my dad kept saying, why don't you go to the bar? I'm an academic. I'm going to be a professor.
I mean, for someone who didn't want law, you are now you are now teaching a module. And I mean, I think it was also impressive that you obtained your LLM cum laude. So
yeah,
for someone that was crying, failing in second year, third year, you did a so nice crazy. Comeback. Well done.
But it was very nice. Oh, look at it. It's a marriage that kind of worked ultimately. So my dad used to say, go to the bar. You know, the worst thing you'd want to do is be employed. So my dad was always somebody who's tried out things. Was an insurance guy. Mm. He only studied law, I think he was around 55 or so, you know, so he really did it later. So I was like, no, I'm not going there.
At the time, did you know that those options existed? Or once you started following the academic route, you weren't so clued up on you could be an attorney or you could be an advocate?
Yeah, well, we all know that you could do articles. Being an advocate felt like a lot of pressure. Looks like something you must do a bit more mature, a bit more older.
Yeah.
I've never gotten a job at the article. I applied, got interviewed. I have no idea why it didn't work out. And I'm also happy that it didn't work out because gave me an opportunity to explore what else law has to offer. Well, together, most of these setbacks are really great ways of to step up, actually. So in my first year of being a lecturer, it was going really well. My daughter's now old. We are grade one. I got married. Then they don't renew my contract. But it was a time when the Labor Relations Act was changing and there was this confusion between contract workers and now potentially becoming permanent.
All of the time.
So the university made a decision not to renew all contract people. And I had no backup because, my plan is to be an academic, right? Then I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Fine, stayed home for some time. I'm broke. I just got married. A child is in grade one or grade R. I can't remember. Fine. Then, but again, the trade union. Like, no, we're taking all these cases to the CCMA. Okay, cool. We do that. I win. I get reinstated. But during that time, I worked at TUT lecturing. Final year, there's these law subjects that the accountings and the... so like commercial law and international law. So I was lecturing that so long. They called me, go to UT, I lectured there, then went back. But this time I knew that I can't stay. I knew that I can't stay.
Because of the seed that had been planted.
Yeah.
Advocate.
The advocate seed hasn't even come in at all. I just felt like, you know, when you feel secure and it's shaken. Then you feel like, no, it means...
You have trust issues, basically. Now you're like, what if this happens again?
Besides that, I'm somebody who believes that life is telling me something. There's something out there for me. So then I started looking for other jobs. I got a job at the Department of Justice, which gave me half of what I used to get paid, you know? And I'm like, I'll make it work. Then I tried to lecture part-time and mark part-time just to make some extra money. But that was one of my favorite jobs because there I'm now working for government. Government is not what I thought government is. And I basically created my own version of government. I used to say, oh, I'm not an employee here. They're my client.
Love it.
I used to be like, can they get relatively formal? Like they bring like that we want legal opinion and this because I'm really good at legal research. I'm really good at writing. So so I knew that that is a skill that I got from working in academia and it came to my advantage in a lot of ways. So you know, my boss, who was the chief litigation officer at that time, elevated me. All the big meetings I'm there, the ministers' meetings, the DG's meetings. People even thought I'm some high up person in government. But that was, you know, we worked on projects on transformation of state legal services, things that are supposed to help the Office of the State Attorney and providing research altogether. And that gave me a different thing of some of the litigation matters in government.
Mm.
So that was good. But then I'm like, no, I need more money and more things to do.
Love it.
You
love
know?
It.
Then I got a job. Then there was a position to go. So in government, there's these positions called state law advisor.
Mm.
One of the good positions for law people, because it pays really well.
Mm. How does one get into that? Like if someone's listening and they're like, what? State law advisor?
State law advisor. So what you would do is usually starts from 5 years and above legal experience.
Mm. And it can be clearly experienced even as a legal researcher that comes towards.
Okay. Yeah, but what they do want is admission. Mm. Either as an attorney or an advocate. So at that time, and then I got admitted. I didn't have the 5 years.
Mm.
But I knew this is my next job.
Mm.
So in between, because also state law advisors, legislative drafting.
Mm.
So in between, I did certificates in legislative drafting, graduated my master's, got my admission, because then you could get your admission without pupillage for being an advocate.
Yes, yes.
Got my admission and just decided to do some waiting time.
Mm.
During that time, I did that. And I'd read, so I wanted to join the Law Reform Commission because the organization was one that looks at modernizing the law, reforming the law, looking at laws that are quite obsolete that need to be changed and reformed. So it's more of a structured legal research position, just on a different level that would ultimately change the legal landscape altogether. So I wanted to work there. Luckily, there was a position open, kind of linked to my old job. Then I got into the Law Reform Commission, worked there on a project called 142 that looked at access to justice.
Mm.
So now that project is the one that kind of moved me to join the bar. Because when you look at the... So we do this, we travel all over.
Mm-hmm.
The country, and when we looked at access to justice, what the constitution gives you the right to access to court, right?
Mm.
But lawyers are expensive, so you don't have the right to court or for your rights to be realized because you don't have money.
Mm.
And so the project looked at finding, especially also with the missing middles, our nurses, our teachers, our mothers, who you don't meet the margin for legal aid.
Yeah.
But you can't. I mean, our parents can only afford lights.
I'm not sure
water.
I can afford myself.
Like, yeah,
if I
me
were
too.
To me go too. And pay for legal services, I'd be like, wait a minute, you know?
So. No.
Yeah.
So that became, that for me was something so, I was like, wow, this is crazy. Then I wanted to join the bar because then I would assist with my own legal expertise in assisting, especially the ones that cannot afford, you know, the ones that cannot afford legal services or, I mean, there's so much injustices in this world.
Absolutely.
It's only now becoming the voice to the voiceless.
I wrote it down because I wrote access to justice and I wanted to come make a joke and say, oh, I thought you didn't have any interest in being,
no.
look at God.
Right? Yeah, so
welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. I like it here.
Yeah, sure.
So it's only there and I'm like, wow, this is so hectic. I want to play a role. I want to do something. I want to change. And also my master's was on the private international law master's, but in all aspects of it, it's marital property. And more specifically, if one looked at Section 7.3 of the Divorce Act that looked at redistribution orders.
Mm.
And that injustice with a financially weaker spouse.
Mm.
You know, if you got married out of community or property and you stayed home and you cannot claim the work that you've put in, you know, into running the family, because you are now, there's nothing for you to get from that. And that happens a lot with women. I know people would say, but it even happens to men. But in majority of the cases,
we do know who the marginalized groups are.
We know. Mm. So I thought I'm going to help women, you know, dealing with. And it was also a thing for me, because when my parents divorced, there was a time when my dad had lots of money, but my mom lived with nothing, really.
Why are you and I siblings? Why are we the same person?
I don't know.
Because that is exactly why I'm here today, sister-in-law, just doing the work that I do, because it's for the women, and it's really for the women who are like my mom.
Right?
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I was touched. You know, dad had properties, houses, cars, whatever. And this woman's building her way up. So she was a teacher. She was hardworking, very, very intelligent woman. So because I didn't like that thing that my mother experienced, she's a strong woman. I don't know, also because I was younger, she never really spoke about what it meant to her. She probably told it to her friends. But even the younger version me could see that this is wrong. So I've always been a fighter for women to have financial stability and to have something for themselves, but also so that if they work in a family, and it's not, I mean, the housewife, I mean, people don't take them serious, but they contribute so much, because in true essence, if we really want to raise a family well, somebody has to stay home.
Yeah.
And somebody works. Mm. But if we had the real respect that was required, we'd do better as a society. We wouldn't have some of these, but I do everything, scenarios that happen. So that was primarily what I wanted to do in the divorce space, so that I can help women. That's when then I applied to join the bar. But having applied to join the bar, I wanted to join a bar that spoke to these transformative objectives. So when I was working in government and we're doing these consultations, I would see that some things are problematic in other bars.
Mm.
So our bar, Papa, so when it started, and I looked at everything, I followed, what are they all about, you know, unapologetically black, unapologetically female.
Mm.
And I'm like, that's a bar I want to be part of. There was a time I thought, okay, fine, ultimately I'm going to join the bar. But when I realized there's a bar coming up and there's a bar that's going to be quite different, that's going to be a space where I can speak, a space that I feel at home. You know how it is for females in the profession. A space that I feel like I belong, in all honesty. And I thought, I'm going to join the bar. And when it started, we were the first group of pupils in 2020 during COVID. That's ultimately how I ended up now being an advocate. And again, I'm not doing a lot of divorce work. God decided else something else.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I think also during our conversation, you've answered most of one of the questions that I had, which was, what would you like to see change in the profession, especially for black women, given that women as a whole have only been in the legal profession for just over 100 years. But black women specifically, it's almost half of that time. What would you like to see happen different that maybe you experienced, you know, XY challenges, and you really hope in the next 10, 50, 100 years from now, that will be truly just a myth?
There's really an imbalance in the economic status of women and men in the profession. You know, if I do work, I submit an invoice, chances of me getting paid versus my male counterpart getting paid is difficult. Now, if I'm going to look for my for me getting paid for the work that I have done, Kuri, I must be gentle. Let's be like, I was just following.
Gentle reminder to please settle this invoice.
I don't want to, you're worried, the relationship. You can't come out as that strong for something that you're entitled to.
For your money. Like,
yeah. No. We can't, that doesn't work. I would like to see where if, Karabo is a male, female. Bida.
Yeah.
Submits his invoice. Kadi 5. Lin. Ke submit the invoice. Kadi 5. After 30 days, we all get paid. If you talk to the males, your outstanding unpaid invoices will be always higher. Bona, they'll get paid. I mean,
Now the understanding is that they must go provide for their families.
I wanted to tell you that. Yeah. I wanted to tell you that because there's a thing. I mean, government tries to bring these transformative things where they try to brief more women. And I don't know about the attorney's profession, but I'm very sure there are serious challenges. But with the advocate profession, we're still very, 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 very few in that space.
Heavily underrepresented.
Yeah,
fair. And also, I was going to say, but briefing is also not the same as getting the money, right?
Yeah.
Because, yes, we on paper, we are getting the same briefs, but really, practically, I'm not able to meet my financial commitments.
Yeah.
As effectively as my male counterpart can because of this issue of chasing after my invoices.
Yeah. And you're touching on something important. Briefing. So, and I say this is why probably. So I'll do divorce. I do it pro bono, right? But it's not majority of my work. Majority of my work would be your admin law, your procurement law type of work. Fine. And I'm happy to have to receive that. And don't worry, it's me saying, oh, I'm so grateful for the opportunity as a female. Because not a lot of females are there. They've been put in your divorce matters, your RAF matters. Not that there's anything wrong with them. But they boxed them into not believing Hore they could do other things in different fields of law. If somebody's looking for a good lawyer, they have to look first for a white male, right? If a white male is not available, it goes to the black male. The black male is not available, look for another black male. And only then it will trickle down to us. But if so, probably clients might feel Hore, we can't afford to lose this matter. It's not always going to be trusted to the females. If you look at Constitutional Court, Supreme Court of Appeal, how many females would you see leading those cases?
And I've actually heard too many times of, initially when I went into business, when I started collective intelligence, my driving force behind that was that I actually want to empower small businesses and enable them to afford legal services. Like, you have to know that between your suppliers, you must have an agreement, If you're a freelancer, you must have an agreement. Just the little things. But when the disputes came with their suppliers, when the disputes came with, their clients, whoever owes them money, I'd do the letters of demand and then find out that the big five law firms are busy with the litigation side. And for me, that was like, okay, why don't you think that I'm competent to see this matter through?
Yeah.
Because I'm the one who, at the very beginning, I was the one drafting these contracts for you, So if anyone knows what the strengths and the weaknesses are of your business, it's me who said at the beginning, why don't you have a contract with your suppliers? You didn't even know that you need a contract with the supplier. Now there's a dispute, but ultimately then, in order to win, you go into the larger law firms.
Yeah.
So it'd be your own.
Yeah. It's a problem everywhere. And I think it's a problem even in other fields for just black people altogether. Mm. If it's serious, we're not good enough. Mm. It's only there and there. I mean, I work with very good black female silks and black male silks. I mean, our bar has great black excellence.
Mm.
They're doing well, but I'm sure if all things being equal, they'd be even doing even better, you know. So if I had to see something change in the profession, it would be just pay us.
Yeah.
Brief us.
Yeah.
Give us opportunities. Mm.
The mentorship as well, you know, mentor that comes us. Into
yes. into play. And another problem we might experience, I know Debelo is good at contract law, right? But if I'm stuck and I want a sounding board, I'm going to ask Pete. Do I make sense?
Mm.
Right? Do I make sense? I won't call you.
Yeah.
Or even if you said you don't make sense or you do make sense, I have to go confirm it.
Yes.
Yeah.
The second guessing, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what Debelo said. Ricky, go repeat that now.
Yeah.
His opinion. And you know what? For the most part, there really is nothing wrong with getting a second opinion, right? Mm. But what is the real intention behind it? Like, yeah. are you undermining me, you know? Yeah, I think.
And it's not even undermining. It's systematic programming.
Yes.
We've been programmed like that. Mm. I mean, I find myself doing it, but I have to consciously remind myself, but wait.
Debelo's competent.
Did you just do you know? That?
And she's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sure. it's because through the years we've been doing over and over bad habits.
There's a lot of, you know, unlearning.
Yeah.
And learning that we have to do.
Yeah.
Sure.
So basically that's what I would change us as women, females, black people. Let's put trust in each other.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that, Tulelo. As we come to the end of our conversation. For how long? Oh, but in the interest of time, no, yeah. For real. You know, just given some of your personal experiences, you know, parents divorcing at a young age, mm-hmm. your entrepreneurial spirit, your setbacks, you know, Kanokolo, when you were pregnant, you thought, am I going to be able to come back from this? And you have come back. And given the person you are today, what words of encouragement do you have for, you know, a young woman out there? Maybe she's just started, you know, her first year, or she's in her fourth year, you know, finds herself just having had a baby, not sure what the next step is. Or somebody who's just finding that their parents have just divorced and they feel like their world is coming, you know, to an end. What kind of words of encouragement do you have? Or any other last thoughts that don't even have to do with words of encouragement? Just maybe something I didn't ask, but it's been on your chest and you really just need a platform to get it out. I promise you, this is the best platform.
Okay. There isn't, I wouldn't know. I mean, like, there's millions of words of encouragement out there. One thing I know for certain, sound like Oprah, one thing I know for certain.
Yes, ma'am.
Is life works out.
Yeah.
One thing I know for a fact is that it always works out for your good.
Mm.
As much as I started here and I've said constantly, probably 3, 4, 5 million times, that I love money, right? But money's not always going to be the most important thing. Money must be a result of your hard work. And every human being in this world is meant to come to plug a gap or to change something that you know, there's a gap. You're solving some issue.
Mm.
You saw the gap
that
we don't have these conversations. And this is a great conversation.
Thank you.
You saw the gap that we don't have conversations, and you saw Debelo, meaning, wait a minute, I've listened to podcasts. But if I who dealt with this issue in their lives differently that I'm dealing with?
Mm.
You know, today's topic, we'll talk to somebody else. your other guests would talk to another person. Mm. But you saw that gap, that there's a need for this. So my words would always be, once you identify the gap, be somebody that can solve the bigger issues of this life, the bigger issues of a client, the bigger issues of, you know, your life or your family.
Your family, yeah. Do you understand? I mean, you said so earlier that, you know, you were working because you saw that, okay, chele, is karsinyana kohaye. So let me help my mom with this one thing, transport. That's a gap, you know?
Yes. Mm. So that's why, ultimately, it should not always be the first point would be, oh, I'm looking at this, it's going to make me millions.
Mm.
Do you understand? I'm looking at this, it's going to make lots of money. Mm. It should make you lots of money. Ultimately, you're entitled to have money. You're entitled to wealth. But it should not be the thing that is the primary objective.
Mm.
Mm. The money must always be something that comes as a result of you having fixed a problem or plugging that gap in whatever market it is. Mm. So... with the wisdom.
Thank you. Thank you so much for
the
last thing.
Be kind.
Be kind.
Be kind. You know how difficult it is to just realize, like, I'm finding it so strange. People are no longer kind. I don't understand what's happening now. Mm. Be kind. Open yourselves up for if somebody needs to talk, be the person, give them a shoulder, an ear.
Mm.
An ear, something, whatever it is, be kind.
I really love that.
Yeah.
For season 10,
what has happened?
Thank you so much, Advocate Makola, for this beautiful conversation, for availing yourself. And I have no doubt that, you know, the journey you've shared to us today is definitely going to impact someone's life in a positive manner.
Thank you. No, thank you for having this platform, creating the space. It looks beautiful, by the way. Congratulations on your growth. I look forward to see what you do in the next 10, 20 years. I'm sure it's going to be super amazing. Well done to all your achievements.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
And to you at home, you've been with me long enough to know that I absolutely appreciate all your feedback, all your engagement, all your comments, all your likes, all your sharing. So please continue to do so. And if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast and to my YouTube channel, now is the time to click subscribe. And please don't forget to rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts.